Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And today we are going to talk a combination of local and national sports. We're going to talk high school football. It's a big topic right now. Of course, we have your high school football fixes covered here on Castle Country Radio. KOAL, the home of the Emory Spartans. You can listen to Emory every Friday night. We'll have more Emory High School football for you this Friday. The Spartans will travel to take on the Grand Red Devils. Emory looking to respond and bounce back from a loss in the season opener at home this past Friday to Richfield. To get us set up for Friday's contest, we'll catch up with Coach John Famalo in just a moment. He's going to join us over the phone. That'll be next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Also coming up on the show today, I want to talk a lot of Major League Baseball because, well, there is a lot going on in the world of Major League Baseball, and we'll dive into that right now. The Washington Nationals have waved the white flag. Talked about the Nationals on the show yesterday with our good friend Bill Lasky. To me, this is a team that had a golden opportunity to climb back into the race and steal the division for what would have been the third consecutive year, because the Braves have not played well over the past 12, 13 games, and the Phillies have not played great over the last 10 to 15 games. Yet the Nationals have played worse, and they have a plus 59 run differential, and that's what is so mind-boggling to me. This team is a game under 500 with Bryce Harper, someone that's probably going to garner a $400 million contract this offseason. I don't care if he slipped number-wise this year. He is still going to garner a massive contract this offseason. It's still going to happen. Max Scherzer may very well be the National League Cy Young, and this team is not going to make the postseason. So what do the Nationals do today? Now remember, the trade deadline has passed, the non-waiver trade deadline in baseball. That's what's important to remember. The Nationals trade second baseman Daniel Murphy to the Cubs, and they sent first baseman Matt Adams to the Cardinals. The Cubs sent a Class A infielder and a player to be named to Washington. The Cardinals send cash considerations for Adams. Now, there's several nuances to this deal that I'm really unsure of. As far as the Cubs go, and I believe the Cubs are the cream of the crop in the National League, far cry from what is going to be considered the cream of the crop in the American League. But the Cubs have added another bat. Where will Murphy play? That's the question. He's having an MVP-type season, batting something like 290. He's got 25 home runs, almost 100 RBIs, 20 steals on the season. He's been great. That's an MVP-type season for Javi Baez. He's the primary second baseman in Chicago. The starting third baseman, Chris Bryant, currently on the DL with a shoulder injury, pretty much means that that's where Murphy will be playing until he comes back. For some oddball reason, Cub fans really like Kyle Schwarber. He's not a long-term solution. I'm telling you right now, Daniel Murphy is going to take over at some point in time for Kyle Schwarber. There's going to be some movement, but to me, Schwarber seems to be the odd man out. Now, as far as the Cardinals go, may just be the most interesting team in the National League at the moment. And I say that because this is a team that was heading nowhere. They fire Mike Matheny. It was about a month ago. About a month, month and a half ago, they fired Matheny. All of a sudden, the Cardinals are at 69-57, 3.5 games back of the Cubs, a half game back of the Brewers. And I'm looking at that wild card race right now. If the playoffs were to begin today, the Cardinals would actually be in the postseason. They have 69 wins. Next best team, 68. That's the Phillies and the Rockies. The Dodgers are two games behind the St. Louis Cardinals. This is amazing the way the NL race is really shaking out. The Cardinals would be the team in the postseason. They'd have a one-game playoff right now with the Milwaukee Brewers. That's why this is such an interesting move for the Cardinals. Now, what do the Cardinals get here in acquiring Adams? I don't know. He did start his career with the Cardinals, so you're bringing in a hometown guy. But he's batting .257, has 18 home runs, 50 RBIs in 94 games. Here's the kicker. 0-21 dating back to August 5th, and he started only four games over that span, losing playing time to Ryan Zimmerman at first base because of it. To me, look, it's very low risk for the Cardinals. They're giving up nothing but cash consideration. What does this mean for the Washington Nationals? This is a team that fired Dusty Baker after winning back-to-back division titles. They bring in rookie manager Dave Martinez. To me, it's all for Bryce Harper. It's a financial move to make sure the Nationals can shore up Bryce Harper, and I don't know if it's going to matter. We'll talk more Major League Baseball a little bit later on in the show. We'll be joined by Steve Bortstein, a great friend of mine and host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. That's coming up in just a bit. Now, speaking of baseball and the National League, the Chicago Cubs are going to shut down Yu Darvish for the remainder of the season with injuries to the right elbow and his triceps. He tried to give it a go in single A. I believe he pitched one inning of a rehab start, if I'm not mistaken, in South Bend. Shook his arm a little bit. Did reach 95 miles an hour on his fastball. Warmed up for a second time. Threw six pitches. Didn't like the way it felt. They shut him down during his rehab start, and that is it for Yu Darvish. For the Cubs, that's okay. I know it's a $100 million mistake. It was a $100 million mistake when they signed Darvish this offseason. You went out and you got Cole Hamels. He's been fantastic. Been great since the trade deadline. The Cubs are going to be just fine. That's some of the big news coming out of the national sports scene today. Now let's take a look at the schedule for Major League Baseball because there's so many big games as we reach the final 35 games of the season. We'll begin at the 5 o'clock hour, the Phillies and the Nationals. Again, the Nationals are done. They're waving the white flag. Philly better take care of business. The Braves will take on the Pirates, another big game at 5:05. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, we get the Orioles on the road to take on the Blue Jays. The Red Sox will play host to the Indians. The Cubs are on the road to take on the Detroit Tigers. Kyle Hendricks will go up against Jordan Zimmermann. That's an interesting pitching matchup, to say the least. San Francisco will travel to meet the Mets at 5:10. We get the Marlins and the Yankees also at 5:10. And the Royals and the Tampa Bay Rays round out that 5 o'clock hour. 6 o'clock, we get Cincinnati at Milwaukee. The Twins will travel to meet the White Sox. The Rockies will take on the Padres. Tyler Anderson will toe the rubber for Colorado tonight. The Angels on the road to take on the Diamondbacks. Patrick Corbin, who's been great all year long for the Diamondbacks, is on the hill. That's at 7:40 tonight. 8 o'clock hour, ESPN nationally televised game. Cardinals-Dodgers, interesting one last night. 3-3, ninth inning. Kenley Jansen, who was activated off the DL following that irregular heartbeat, which I thought was going to shut him down for the season, comes back last night. He was not right. Kenley Jansen should not have been in that game last night for the Dodgers. Best closer in the bigs, dealing with something that's life-threatening. Not career-threatening, life-threatening. And I can't believe the Dodgers activated him last night. I do not blame Kenley Jansen for giving up two home runs in this game against the Cardinals. I blame Dave Roberts. And I blame the Dodgers front office, who have completely botched this entire season based on the talent that they have. Jansen comes in, gives up two home runs. Cardinals get a big, big win over the Dodgers. And that L.A. bullpen blows yet another game. 8 o'clock tonight, the Dodgers will take on the Cardinals. 8:05, we get the Rangers and the A's. And in the nightcap, it is Houston and Seattle. And that AL West race is the most interesting race in all of baseball. The Astros and the A's are tied. Oakland gets a win last night. Houston loses to Seattle. The A's are at 75-50. They are dead even with the World Series champions. The difference? Houston's been better on the road than Oakland has throughout the majority of the year. The A's are a serious World Series contender. I said that on the show yesterday, and I'm going to go back to it. This team is a serious player for the World Series, and they are now dead even with the defending champs in the Houston Astros. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front, most of it geared towards baseball. We will talk more Major League Baseball a little bit later on in the show. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll be joined by Coach John Famalo with the Emory Sport and Football Team. Plus, we'll give you the local sports recap. It is a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM in just a moment. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. This past weekend, it was the annual Helper Arts Festival Horseshoes Tournament, and 12 teams participated. First place went to Dakota Andrews and Brett Davis. They had to play the what-if game, making the championship contest a two-game tilt. Second place went to Janelle Norton and Dallin Wilson. Third place went to Tommy Martinez and Rhett Popejoy. Next up, it is the Fall Horseshoes Single League. Registration will end on August 23rd, that's this week. The league will start on August 30th. It'll run for 6 weeks. You can get more information by calling Rochelle at 820-6636. Coming up this weekend, the Habitat for Humanity will hold their second annual golf tournament at the Carbon Country Club. This is a four-person scramble with a shotgun start set for 8:30 a.m. The cost is $160 per team. Lunch is included, and the green fees and cart will be separate. You can sign up now by giving the Country Club a call at 637-2388 or visit HabitatCastleCountry.org for more information. Again, that's the second annual Habitat for Humanity golf tournament taking place this Saturday. Up and coming, once again, it's the Batten for Boobies Co-Ed Softball Tournament. Now, this is a charity fundraising event in conjunction with October's National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It'll take place on Saturday, October 6th. Get your pink on and price at the Carbon County Fairgrounds Softball Complex. The cost is $200 per team. The deadline to register is Friday, September 28th by 5 p.m. All of the proceeds will go to the United Way of Eastern Utah. Each team is guaranteed three games. It will be in the format of double elimination. No need to be good at softball to play in this tournament. Just have some fun, come on out, and help save lives. Again, it's the Batten for Boobies 2018 Co-Ed Softball Tournament in conjunction with October National Breast Cancer Awareness Month on Saturday, October 6th. We move over to high school golf. And today, the Carbon Dinos will travel on the road to Spanish Fork, the home course of American Leadership Academy. The Dinos currently have a 39-stroke lead after dominating the home meet this past Thursday at the Carbon Country Club. Recently, we were joined by Coach Brett Johnson, and he talked about the team's performance last week as they developed a massive lead.
They exceeded my expectations, for sure. We had a great showing from Brady Gagan, who shot 72, Carson Martinez, who shot 72, and Nick Olson shot his career best 72. And then our fourth scorer was Caden Slavinsky, who shot 79.
Coach Johnson continued by talking about the difficulties of the Spanish Fork course.
It's just a little different than our home course. The back nine is a little bit, you gotta know where to hit it. And if you do hit it well there, you can score there. The main thing is getting the ball off the tee into a good position to where you can find a good way to score from there.
Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Carbon Dino Golf Squad in the coming days. Now we stick with Carbon High School, and today the girls' soccer team will look to jump the 500 barrier as they open up Region 14 play on the road against the Union Cougars. The Lady Dinos are currently 1-1 overall on the season. Today's region tilt will count towards the region record. It's set for a 3:30 start time. And we end by moving over to the Emory girls' soccer squad. They, too, will travel on the road today to take on the Beaver Beavers. This contest is not a Region 15 tilt. Emory will start region play next week. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
Tuesday edition of the Coach's Corner, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. Let's talk some high school football. This past Friday, both Carbon and Emory opened up the 2018 season. Unfortunately for both teams, they suffered losses. Emory falling to Ridgefield 42-9, and in that contest, Zion Gibson scored his first touchdown as a member of the Emory Spartans. Also, Brock Winter booting about a 35-yard field goal. So there were some positives for the Spartans, but Ridgefield, a very good team with a very good quarterback in Emmett Hafen. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a little bit about this past weekend's contest, we have Coach John Famalo. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Definitely, Coach. It's always fun to talk Emory High School football with you. And we'll start by talking about Friday's game, season opener against Richfield. Seemed like you and I have talked about that game for a couple of months. I know I had an opportunity to talk to a couple of kids, and they seemed excited. They seemed up for it, but unfortunately, it did not play out in our favor at all.
No, it wasn't even close to the expectations we had. So it was a little disappointing. I think kids were a little disappointed, but in the day, you know, we were young and we just got no choice than other to get better. And so, you know, that's what we'll take from it. But overall, I think we struggled in, you know, all aspects of the ball, on both sides of the ball. But there were some good things that came out as well.
Well, let's talk about those good things, Coach. What are some of the positives that you pull from the game on Friday?
You know, I thought last year we struggled a little bit defensively with our linebackers. You know, I thought that we played a little slow, and I thought our linebackers this year, you know, Dayton Bailing, I think he led us in tackles. Keaton Christman was another kid. They were flying all over the place. And so, you know, defensively I felt good. Anytime they tried to run between the tackles, you know, we were pretty quick to the ball. You know, pass coverage we struggled a little bit, but we're a little young back there. On the offensive side, you know, Rance had a few touches. I think he could have had a few more touches. You know, if we could have established the run game, that was a little disappointing because I felt like we should be able to run on those guys. We kind of had to pull away from the game plan from that as the game progressed. But other than that, you know, guys made some good decisions and some bad decisions. But overall, I think it was a good learning experience for these kids that it's you can't just show up and, you know, expect teams to lay you down and, you know, you get to do what you want. So it was a good experience that way for our kids to realize, hey, we've got to step our game up a whole lot more to be able to, you know, get a victory on Friday night.
Early on in this game, Coach, you guys take a 3-0 lead as Brock buries close to a 40-yard field goal. From that point on, well, at that point, I mean, it looks as if the game is actually playing into the. I mean, that's what you guys want to do. I mean, there was like, what, 7 minutes, I think, to play in the first quarter when that happened. So it seemed like at that point you guys were doing what you wanted to do offensively. What was the big change? What was the big difference maker from that point on the offensive side of the ball?
I mean, we had the big play, the Jack Madison across the middle. I mean, a 51-yard gain, that was a big play. Again, I think we were first and 10 from about the 12-yard line. You know, I have a running back. We blocked it wrong, but I had a running back going backwards instead of trying to get what he could. So now we're second and 13. Then we get a snap infraction. Now we're second and 18. And, you know, this is stuff that we talked about, you know, all summer long. And, you know, in the fall, we're not good enough to kill ourselves. And that's exactly what we did. And so we're fortunate enough to get, you know, Brock kicked, like you say, a 33-yard. It was a great kick, hit the pole and went in. So we took 3 points. But, you know, I think that was, you know, kind of was like, oh, no, this is a repeat of last year. And then you switch on that defensive side, and, you know, we had, I think, 3 or 4 third down possessions that we had, you know, that we have to win the third down battle. We got to get off the field, and, you know, that's one thing the kids we struggled with. We had some 3rd and 13, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 5s that we just could not get off the field.
It's obviously a different beast when you're going up against a quarterback like Emmett Hafen. You and I talked about him last week, and you said the key is we got to make sure that we contain him. I don't think anyone's ever going to shut him down, but, Coach, he was every bit as good as advertised in this first game.
Yeah, you know, and that's our whole game plan going in, you know, and just try to keep him in the pocket. When we didn't keep him in the pocket, he created with his feet or created with his feet and then threw the ball to some open guys. That makes it tough for coverage guys when, you know, people are scrambling. You got to try to go either, you know, commit to tackle the quarterback or playing coverage, and, you know, he'll make you pay for that, and he did that. And so, you know, he's a good player, and, you know, I expect good things from Richfield. You know, Coach Hitchens is a new coach, and I think he's doing a great job with those kids. So, you know, credit to them and what they're doing, and, you know, that's kind of where it ended up.
You talked about getting Rance some more touches moving forward. You guys did manage to score a touchdown late in this contest. Zion Gibson scores off a 12, 13-yard run. How important is a touchdown like that moving forward for the offense, Coach, where you've been stopped pretty much the entire game? You've had penalties affect drives. You've been able to move the ball, but you haven't put together a full, efficient drive to actually put one in the end zone. How important is that for this group?
It's good. I mean, anytime you can put the, you know, the football in the end zone, it's a positive thing. And so I think, you know, whether or not they had twos in there or not, you know, we kept grinding with the ones we had. And, I appreciate the kids working hard. And I'd like to say, anytime you can put it in the end zone, I think that can help give the confidence that your offense needs to be able to know, hey, you know, we can score. So.
What was the vibe around the team yesterday at practice, Coach? They seemed focused.
I think they are. I think they understood as they watched film. I think, you know, film doesn't lie, and so I think as kids saw what, you know, we showed them as well as they watched themselves, that there's some things that, you know, some deficiencies that certainly that we can fix. You know, that's one good thing is there's things you can fix. They're fixable errors, and so, you know, that's what the kids, I think, realize is, okay, hey, yeah, we made a mistake. We got to learn from it. We just got to get better. And so, you know, I think their focus this week is, hey, we're going to get back after it and the grind. I don't see, heads hanging low, like, hey, oh, season's over, you know, or anything like that. So, you know, my kids' attitudes and the vibe, so as far as that, is just positive.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach John Fumalo with the Emory Sport and Football Team. Coach, you basically have three more weeks to get this figured out. Some of the aspects that definitely need attention and some improvement. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. What was the biggest noticeable deficiency for this team on Friday night?
I just thought, you know, I was hoping Kyson could read some things a little bit better. I think we could run our RPOs a little bit better. If you watched us last year, that was bread and butter to, you know, Wilson, that little, you know, give is the linebacker bit. And so, you know, he's got to get used to Zion being able to run that route. And so, you know, he's got to get confidence in that. But I think, you know, I thought we struggled reading. And then blocking on the defense, on the offensive line, I thought our pass blocking was decent. We got to improve there. But, you know, our run blocking at times, we kind of missed some blocks. And so I think those are things that, you know, on the offensive side that I think we can improve and get better at this week.
We'll talk defensive side of the ball. I mean, already you've mentioned some of the things, Coach, that you guys have to improve on. When I look at your football team, as far as blazing speed on the outside, I don't necessarily see that with this squad, Coach. So how do you make up for that on either side of the football?
Like I say, it's one of those. We got to play fundamentally sound, and we got to get in good positions to be able to make plays. And so, again, when kids get tired, that's the first thing that breaks down to their fundamentals, and that's what I saw, is that we got tired early in the game, and, you know, that first thing that goes down to the fundamentals on the angles that we take to tackle, on the angles that we take to block. And so if you don't stay fundamentally sound that way, you know, everything from that point starts to continue to break down, especially if you don't have the athleticism or the speed that you need to be able to cover where you want.
Coach, let's talk about Grand for a moment. This is a team that lost to Morgan 42-6. I don't think there was any surprises there. I mean, when we look at Morgan, this is one of the best teams in the 3A classification. At least that's the way they are projected throughout the preseason polls. Grand did manage to score a late touchdown on them, one that didn't necessarily matter much in the third quarter, but it was basically on a long broken play. That's how Grand managed to get into the end zone. Have you watched video on the Red Devils yet?
Yeah, I actually watched the Morgan game, and, you know, I was honestly impressed with Grand. You know, that first drive they had, and honestly, we're in scoring position. I think they ended up with a turnover, but, again, it kind of looked like our game where they were able to move the ball between the, you know, 20s, but either turnovers or penalties caused them, you know, not to be able to put the football in the end zone. And so they're a big physical team, you know, and you know, they're coming at you. They're sending bodies at you. It's, you know, they're pulling a guard and a tackle every single play, and, you know, they're sending a lot of bodies, and, you know, they're a physical team, and, you know, they have some pretty decent runners. Then they'll take some shots over the top, but, you know, we just got to be as physical on that side and kind of control the line of scrimmage. That's where the game's going to be won and lost this Friday, is on that line of scrimmage. Who wins that battle?
I think we got, what, back-to-back road games now, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, back-to-back road games. Coach, with a young team, you play at home to open up the season. I mean, there is some tension. There is some pressure on those boys. I'm curious to see how this younger team performs on the road. And you got two cracks at a 2A school and a 4A school. I actually like the next 2 weeks of play.
Yeah, no, I think it lines up well for us if we can, you know, get focused and get after it. I think, like you say, we are a young team, and we're really going to find out what these kids are made of early. Like, say, Grand's a pretty good, you know, it's a whole different, you know, animal than Richfield. And then Payson's, you know, every week it's a little different look. And so I think it's good for our kids to be exposed to different systems and things that are coming that hopefully will prepare us for the season.
You know, as far as the injuries go, Coach, are you guys in good shape heading into Friday's contest?
Yeah, honestly, that's one good thing we've had so far, is we've had, you know, limited injuries. We've been banged up just like everybody else, but for the most part, I think our guys are healthy. Hopefully we get Brax Young back. You know, that'll help on the defensive side for us. And so, you know, I think we're moving in a good way that way.
And knocking on wood, it seems like at this time for the last 3 years, we've had injury problems at the beginning of the season, and that just doesn't seem to be an issue this year, which I'm sure for you with limited numbers, I mean, that's a sigh of relief.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's, you always take a deep breath, and you know, when you go to camp or when you have, you know, preseason games and things like that, that you worry about kids staying healthy. And, you know, we've been fortunate, like you say, knock on wood, that we haven't had any major injuries so far this year.
Now, before I let you go, Coach, we'll talk about the 3A in general. Grantsville, Morgan get wins. Carbon, Judge, and Union all pick up losses. Any surprises for you across the board in the 3A North over the weekend?
No, not really. I mean, like I say, they every one of that lost, they played some tough teams, and the wins. I mean, it's kind of laying out how I've seen. And so, again, the landscape so far as that 3A North, we kind of know, you know, what we're up against. There's some really good teams, and you know, win-loss records doesn't mean a whole lot once you get to season play. And so, again, I think every team's dangerous on a Friday night, depending on who shows up.
Coach, it's always fun to get you on and talk about the football team. Thank you again for the time, and I know we'll talk again real soon.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartan football team. This Friday, Emory on the road to take on the Grand Red Devils. We'll bring you the live play-by-play call beginning at 6:30 with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by kickoff at 7. We've got a break for just a moment. More coming up. It's a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Auto Farm Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Make history.
One more lap to go.
With the first race of the NASCAR playoffs at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Here comes a comeback. The kid is back. Back on track again.
I want to talk more baseball because the Washington Nationals are waving that white flag. We talked a little bit about this to open up the show. I want to continue on that conversation right now. We'll bring in a great friend of the show, Steve Bordstein. He is the host of First Sports, Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time today.
Yeah, I appreciate it as well, sir.
Great stuff going on in Major League Baseball right now. And I say great stuff because nobody could have predicted at the beginning of the year that the Washington Nationals would be waving the white flag on August 21st. But that's exactly what they are doing in trading Daniel Murphy over to the Chicago Cubs. Now, on the flip side of that, they're also giving up Matt Adams. And we can talk about the lack of production that Adams has provided over the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. But still, the point remains, the Washington Nationals, they're finished. They're done.
Yeah, I mean, before the season started, it wasn't a question of would they win the division. It was a question of how much they win the division by, and then who was going to be the team that was eventually going to beat them in the playoffs, because that's always been the story with the Washington Nationals. But clearly now, with the announcement now of Daniel Murphy going to the Chicago Cubs, which in itself lends itself to a number of other discussions about what you do with Daniel Murphy at this point going to the Cubs, but now you clearly have a problem if you're Washington, and maybe it brings up a financial thing. Maybe it's because you really need now to keep Bryce Harper on this organization next year. Maybe you clear some cap space. Maybe you decide to make another move in order to, you know, enhance Bryce Harper's status with the organization next year. But yeah, the white flag is clearly up on Washington right now, and it does lend itself to the question again of, was it at all a smart move to fire Dusty Baker? Because Dusty Baker, say what you want about, you know, his postseason success, the Nationals' postseason success. This team is not the same team it was last year or the year before that when they won the National League East under Dusty Baker and both times got to the playoffs.
And speaking of the Nationals, and again, Dusty Baker, I think a lot of this points to Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals. And we can talk about the Dodgers here in a moment because I think this front office has flubbed up over the last couple of weeks as well. But for me, when I look at the Washington Nationals, Steve, it is a series of blunders over the past 6 months. Going back to this offseason, we can even go back further, maybe the past 8 months, a series of blunders for this front office. And because of the follies that they continue to produce, I wonder if that's the final, the nail in the coffin as far as the Bryce Harper era goes in Washington, because the front office has been terrible. If we talk about general managers and individuals whose jobs may be on the line, Mike Rizzo was right there in that conversation.
Well, and I'll take it back even a few months further. I'll take it back to the firing of Dusty Baker. I think this was a bad move. You know, Dave Martinez is not the guy for this job, not with this team. He just wasn't. And I think you go back to that. I think you go back to that firing right there as sort of the beginning of the end here. Say what you will about Dusty Baker. No, the team did not have the postseason success that I think a lot of us had predicted they would have, or even that we thought Dusty Baker would bring to that organization after a very such a successful career managing elsewhere. Clearly, you know, Dave Martinez is not the guy for this job. And to your point, Mike Rizzo is probably the guy who's going to get the belt on this one, because where does it stop? The Bucs has to stop somewhere. The Bucs not going to stop with Bryce Harper because he's going to get paid, whether it's in Washington or elsewhere. The Bucs not going to stop with Dave Martinez unless you're willing to make a clean, wholesale change of that front office, and I think that has to happen.
Let's talk about the Chicago Cubs. They're the team that lands Daniel Murphy. You and I had a conversation earlier today. I don't know where Daniel Murphy fits in to the landscape of this Chicago Cubs squad, because right now, if we're looking at it, Javi Baez is having an MVP-type season. He's hitting .290. He has 25 home runs. He's closing in on 100 RBIs and 20 steals. He's the primary second baseman for the Cubs. Chris Bryant is on the DL. That obviously is where Murphy will fill in for the time being, but once Chris Bryant comes back, where does Daniel Murphy fit in on this Cubs roster?
It's a great question, and unless you're already booking your tickets to the World Series when you can use him as a DH, or the next couple of, you know, interleague series here, whatever's left, I mean, what do you do with Daniel Murphy at this point? Because you're not taking Javi Baez out of the lineup, to your point. Again, 25 home runs, 89 RBIs, 20 steals this year. Unless you're planning on moving him to third to fill in while Chris Bryant gets off the disabled list, I mean, Murphy has experience playing third base, but if you're the Cubs right now, whose bats have been a little bit quieter of late, where does this move help them? Because you're taking a regular bat out of the lineup, you're putting in a new bat. To me, it just seems like it does reek a little bit of desperation right now on the Cubs side, who also announced earlier today, and this is a familiar name for both you and I, they also announced earlier today that Yu Darvish is going to be shut down for the rest of the year. I'm not weeping too much about that right now, but I mean, the Cubs are in a bit of a predicament right now. They're not clear cut winners of this National League Central. You've got Milwaukee, you've got St. Louis making a big run. I know we'll get to them with the Matt Adams move here, but the Cubs are by no means a home free here.
No, and if you're a Cub fan, the glaring, I guess, blemish out of this whole Yu Darvish deal is the fact that it's a $100 million contract. What softens that blow is acquiring Cole Hamels, because he has exceeded my expectations since coming over to Chicago with the trade deadline, Steve. I didn't think that move was going to help the Cubs at all. He was dreadful in the first half of the season for the Rangers, but acquiring him with the production that they have gotten definitely softens the blow of that horrible contract that Theo Epstein gave Yu Darvish.
Oh, no question about it. It does soften the blow, and it speaks a lot again, you know, to some of the, it speaks a lot to the scouts. It speaks a lot to Joe Maddon's ability to find a reclamation project, if you will. That's clearly what Cole Hamels was. It didn't work out, obviously, with Yu Darvish. And, you know, whatever happened in Game 7 of the World Series, the tailspin was there before. We saw it a little bit in last season with the Dodgers. We saw it, obviously, with this season as well with the Cubs. But, yeah, I mean, the Cole Hamels thing has clearly softened that blow. But, again, I just have questions right now about this Cubs team going forward. Unless the bats pick up a lot here in the next few weeks, and maybe they will with Daniel Murphy coming over here. But, again, it's at the expense of putting him in a position that he's not normally play. They doesn't normally play. It also comes at the expense of whatever chemistry might be in that clubhouse right now, which may or may not be that great right now.
Let's talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. They acquire Matt Adams, and this is a deal that, you know, really, when you take a look at the production, Adams has not been good. You pointed this out to me earlier today, Steve. He hasn't had a hit since August 5th. He's 0 for 21 in that span. And he's only started four games, losing a lot of that playing time to Ryan Zimmerman. But at the same time, I like Adams, and I wonder if a change of scenery, going back to a familiar club, a team he's already played for, is what he needs. And if it is, in fact, exactly what he needs, this is an under-the-radar move that actually could help out the Cardinals down the stretch as they battle for what could be an NL Central title. I can't believe we're talking about that, but it's within the realm of possible.
Yeah, before August 5th, you could argue his numbers were pretty decent. Right now he's hitting .257, but, you know, that's, again, throwing in the 0 for 21 since August 5th right now. But he has 18 home runs. He's got 48 RBIs. He's only played 94 games this year. And it's a reunion, so that does help a lot. And I think it also underscores, and again, this was something you and I talked about earlier, it really does underscore how amazing a turnaround it has been for the St. Louis Cardinals since the firing of Mike Matheny. How many times do we see it that usually firing a manager mid-season, that's the white flag, they're done, and instead we have seen, again, the kind of the rebirth we always see from the Cardinals in the second half of the year, but you throw in on top of that a new manager replacing a manager who may or may not have had control of that locker room. We had heard comments from Yadier Molina earlier before Matheny was fired that there were issues in the clubhouse. There seemed to be a sense of relief when Matheny was gone. So, I mean, again, you throw in the usual late-season surge from the Cardinals, new management there, and now you bring back a guy who was there, you know, for the last big run of success in Matt Adams. I think it's a good move for them, and I think they're clearly making their mark right now as they continue a three-game set this week against the Dodgers.
Big three-game set with the Dodgers, and that's an excellent segue into my next question for you. Last night, the Dodgers, they activate Kenley Jansen. He comes into a game, a 3-3 game with the Cardinals. He gives up back-to-back home runs. 5-3, Dodgers lose. Yet another game late, a pivotal game against an opponent that's in the wild card chase. Steve, the Dodgers have yet to make any moves for the the waiver deadline, I guess we could say. Past the non-waiver deadline, is what I'm trying to say. The Dodgers haven't done anything to strengthen that bullpen. They prematurely activate Kenley Jansen, and it blows up in their face. It looks like this is the end for Dave Roberts, or it should be. And I mentioned at the beginning of this segment the flubs of the Washington Nationals. The Dodgers have gone a completely different route over the last month by acquiring impending free agents with Manny Machado and Brian Dozier, but they completely neglected the bullpen, which has been the problem all year long. I don't know who's to blame here. I just know that Dave Roberts does not have control of this team right now, and it's a bad look for a team that's probably not going to make the postseason.
Dodgers spent $80 million to retain the services of Kenley Jansen leading up to the 2017 season. They gave Justin Turner a $64 million deal. They had previously allocated big money for Brit Hill. They guaranteed Kenta Maeda $25 million over the life of an 8-year contract. And that's basically it for long-term contracts since Andrew Friedman took over this organization in 2014. But now you've got them under the threshold as far as the luxury tax is concerned. So, yeah, you can re-sign Manny Machado. That's fine because he's clearly going to be a guy who you can put at third base. You can make moves during the offseason. You can trade certain players. But what do you do with Brian Dozier? Because Brian Dozier is useless to the Dodger organization next year once Corey Seager comes back off the DL, if he comes back 100%, which I'm assuming he will. But now you bring up the Kenley Jansen. Look, this bullpen was a question mark coming into this season. They had issues in their bullpen going through the 2017 World Series. That's why they lost that World Series. As far as it's one of the reasons why they lost that World Series, hashtag you, Darvish. But we'll move on. But this is a big problem for the Dodgers. And to bring up the Kenley Jansen thing for a moment, what's going on with Kenley Jansen right now? We heard that it was an irregular heartbeat issue, that he wasn't going to come back at all for the season, that it was going to be 3 weeks. Now he's back in the lineup last night. He didn't look good. He looked worse than he did before the irregular heartbeat issue comes up. He gives up the two home runs in the ninth inning last night. They lose 5-3. I don't need Kenley Jansen turning into a Hank Gathers where suddenly it turns into a medical issue when he's on the field, and then it's a much bigger problem, just looks-wise, appearance-wise, to the Dodgers going forward. Kenley Jansen needs to be shut down immediately, and then you get to the issue of Dave Roberts. And I've said this before. I've said it on my show. I'll say it here again. Dave Roberts, if this team is going to fall apart in the last month and a half of the season, the last 40 games of this season, then Dave Roberts needs to go. You have too much talent on this lineup. I'll even throw in your boy Yasiel Puig. There's too much lineup. There's too much talent in this lineup right now to have it wasted by Dave Roberts. And there is a guy out there in Los Angeles, who has managed, who I believe will be managing somewhere in Southern California next season, and that man's name is Joe Girardi. And I highly recommend. I don't like managing. I don't like coaches or managers. I don't like calling for guys to get fired because I don't think that's our job as talk show hosts. I don't think that's our job to suggest these things. But I'm a Dodger fan, so I'm going to put off my talk show host hat here, and I'm going to throw it on as a fan. I want Joe Girardi managing this team. I know what Joe Girardi has done with talented rosters, talented lineups. I know what he did in New York. I think he can do that same thing in L.A.
I really appreciate you giving Yasiel Puig a shout-out. Thank you.
I know. You know how difficult that is for me to do.
Oh, and listen. I'm playing that clip back on your show the next time I'm on it. I got it saved.
Because I'm not a fan. I mean, I'm not running around here with a Fleet jersey. I know your family is. I'm not. But there's too much talent on this lineup. And you and I have talked about this extensively. There's too much talent here. This is too good a baseball team to have it wasted by a manager who has, in my mind, whether it was Kenley Jansen's move here this week, whether it was Rich Hill, whether it was Clayton Kershaw, whether it's Kenta Maeda, anyone. There's been so much mismanagement of too many talented players on this roster for Dave Roberts to continue on as manager.
Well, I agree. I absolutely agree. Steve Bornstein, the host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. Steve, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Every weekday morning, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Fox AM 1340, 93.9 FM. You can listen to the show, First Sports, weekday mornings again, through the iHeartRadio app, which you can download to your smartphone or wireless device. You can go to our website at foxsports1340.com. We talk a variety of national sports. Tomorrow we'll be talking some more NFL preseason previews, talking to the Tennessee Titans beat writer over at USA Today. We'll also be doing some golf talk tomorrow morning, some NFL and college football talk. We do that every weekday morning, 7 a.m. on Fox Sports, AM 1340, 93.9 FM. On the weekends, I host a horse racing show nationally syndicated called The Fast Track. Got a huge weekend coming up with the Travers coming up on Saturday out at Saratoga. Should be a very good race. Plenty of selections and analysis there as well. That's weekend mornings at 8 a.m. Mountain Time. And again, you can hear it on our website at foxsports1340.com. Follow me on Twitter at fox1340. AM.
Always fun to get you on, Steve. Thank you again for the perspective. I look forward to doing it again soon.
Looking forward to it as well, my friend.
Again, that's Steve Bornstein taking out the time to join us to talk some Major League Baseball. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We are live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. With all of the electric.